There's a lot I have to say regarding giftedness and the things in my life that are directly or indirectly related to which, in my view, is everything.
Hello, and welcome to the International Gifted Consortium. I'm Vanessa Wood. We hear real-life stories daily from our communities, from our schools, and from our families across the globe, both heartwarming and heart-wrenching. In order to truly understand our highly and profoundly gifted population, we have to go beyond our own experiences to the depths of another's reality. In each episode, we'll give you a glimpse into the life. So sit back, embrace the space, and take in the view. From the eyes of the highly profoundly gifted, this is Room with a View. Hello, welcome back to Room with a View. I'm so excited to be sharing this space with you today. It's been quite the year. In January, the IGC launched the first international study of highly profoundly gifted children and emotional, intellectual, imaginational, psychomotor, and central overexcitabilities. We can't wait to share the results with you. I want to take a moment to pause and to thank the individuals that have been part of this research project. This historical research would not be possible without the IGC research team. I am confident when I say this team, scattered near and far, includes the world's most committed, most dedicated group of researchers, educators, school administrators, parents, and scholars, including studies in language, psychology, philosophy, and cognitive science. This body of extraordinary individuals include co-PI Peter Van Petegem from the University of Antwerp, Lorraine Bouchard, Els D. Witt, Suzanne Pickett-Martinson, and Jared Nussbaum. The study, including 88 study participants, would not be possible without these brilliant stars and the amazing parents who all participated, as well as countless other individuals, including IGC Arizona Ambassador Valerie Marsh, the IGC board, and above all, the generous IGC donors who truly are the beating heart of the IGC. The IGC exists, as you all know, to serve highly profoundly gifted children, adolescents, and families, and the teachers, the school administrators, the psychologists, and the pediatricians who are responsible for serving this special population. Thank you, our audience. Thank you so much for joining us and joining in on our efforts, for listening, and for sharing. Today, it is my extreme pleasure to welcome Dr. Lorraine Bouchard. Up next on Room with a View. Hi, Lorraine. Thank you so much for joining me. We have so much to talk about. I am so excited to talk more about your work, including your 2004 study, your School for the Gifted, Raynard School for Gifted Students in Houston. And I'm especially eager to hear more about your book, Getting to Hear. So can you start by taking us back to your 2004 study?
Hi, Vanessa. Thank you very much for inviting me to the podcast. I'm delighted to be here. So you ask about my 2004 research. My dissertation was exploring how can we identify overexcitabilities in younger children, because the instruments that we did have for identifying overexcitabilities would be most effective at ages 12 and older, and they were not necessarily observational. And since younger children, getting them to fill out a questionnaire isn't always easy. So what I did was develop an instrument that somebody who knew nothing about overexcitabilities could think of a student and go through a checklist to see if those students exhibited symptoms of overexcited abilities. And what I found was that, yes, certain overexcited abilities did show up more so in gifted, but there were also a large chunk of those OEs showing up in kids who had not been identified as gifted.
Yes, Lorraine, thank you. Your work certainly raised some very good questions, allowing us to consider overexcited abilities on a continuum where one might be higher or lower depending on the overexcitability or even the combinations of overexcitabilities or potentially the level of giftedness as we are examining in the current IGC study. In trying to figure out the discriminants of overexcitabilities, no study prior to the IGC looked specifically at the highly profoundly gifted population. So we certainly hope our work will shed new light. I'm thankful to realize that as a team, we interviewed 88 parents of highly profoundly gifted children across 2 continents, 2 countries, and over 20 states. So I want to thank you for being a vital part of this study, on top of your many years of work on the topic and in the field of gifted education. Can you tell us about the inspiration behind your school for gifted children?
I too am eager to see the results of what OEs we find in the highly and profoundly gifted. If there is a continuum, that would be fascinating. I'm also eager to see if we can take the LMNOE and then later follow up with the same students with a more extensive OEQ to see if there is consistency or change. It'll be fascinating to see the lifelong process. But you ask about my inspiration for the school that I started back in 1986, Reynard School for Gifted Children. The inspiration was completely organic. It stemmed from my very strong dissatisfaction with school as a child and especially as an adolescent. I thought, why should somebody like me, who has a love of learning, dislike school so intensely? So I actually began researching it and had access to the teacher's professional library at the high school to begin reading about progressive education and how education could be. Experience in education, freedom to learn, Postman and Weingartner's The Soft Revolution. It was the 60s and the 70s, and so the atmosphere was right for a change. So I went into public school and thought I could change it from within, but that was absolutely impossible. You can't change big institutions. It's much easier to start from scratch. So when I turned 30, I realized if I really was going to make this happen, I should start a school. So that was my inspiration. I wanted it to be mixed age grouping because I don't believe in the value of a lockstep for students, and especially gifted students who may be very high in one area and more developmentally average in others. And so when you have a group of mixed-age students who are at all different levels, that is your expectation. Instead of thinking of some as being low or high, we just keep going from where we are. I also believed in the value of time in nature and time in playing in more than 6 inches of pea gravel over a blacktop parking lot. So I also believed in the value of getting to know your country and travel and camping. So we took many field trips and traveled all over the place with the idea that once they got to high school, they should be competent about traveling and competent in a foreign language to be able to travel out of the country.
It's amazing to realize the progression that your desire to start a school actually stems from your time as a student. And it sounds like, unfortunately, your displeasure as a student. It's heartbreaking, right? To hear that a child with a passion, a joy for learning, would hate school. We hear it, unfortunately, far too often from children, their parents, and from adults alike. So thank you for sharing the difference you were able to make for children in your school through the environment you were able to create as you mentioned, the mixed age grouping, time in nature, and getting to know your country, all extremely valuable components. I'm curious, thinking back to your time as a student, what's one thing you think the stakeholders, the adults, could have done to nurture your love of learning that would have made a difference for you?
One of the things that they should have considered, I think, would have been acceleration, grade acceleration, even if it's just within certain subjects. Unfortunately, the Iowa acceleration scale wasn't available back then, so I have no doubt I could have easily done just as much in the next older grade. Another thing I think they could have done more of was to build in time for individual pursuits and passions for those that have them. Some schools do a genius hour in which students are encouraged for that, and I think that would have been awesome. To be able to give credit for work that students might be doing outside of school. For example, when I had helped to co-found a theater group in my hometown, and I was producing and directing musical theater, it would have been nice to have gotten some credit for that or time to pursue that and analyze that as part of, for example, an English credit. Another thing I would have liked to have seen happen would be in high school, because high school was overcrowded, it was, I think, a staggered schedule could have made it feel less like a factory. I think that for the schools to be able to have the freedom to use judgment for exceptional cases. So, for example, in my book, I talk about the fact that I managed to get 3 years of high school done in 2 years, but I was required to complete 3 years of PE regardless, instead of PE being something that you did each year for exercise. They wouldn't waive that. So instead of having a study hall where I could work on all my correspondence courses, I instead had to take PE 5 days a week instead of 3 days a week. They had no flexibility because the state required 3 years of high school equals 3 years of PE. I also think it would have been more engaging if there had been more modern world history and current events. It felt like I was taking American history repeated over and over. And even though there was spiraling, there was no requirement touching on anything after the Civil War, essentially. We barely got to World War I. So I believe that another thing that is helpful to students, something I've repeatedly offered, would be when I would give an assignment, and often an assignment that had choices, I would always throw in a line called or, where they could write in an alternate assignment of something they really wanted to pursue and negotiate and get credit for that. So those are a few of my ideas of what I think would have made a difference to me in my youth to have hated school less.
To think that a line called or could make all the difference. What a simple yet brilliant concept, and so easy to execute, right? Thank you for sharing. Let's talk more about your new book, Getting to Hear. Tell us about it.
Thank you for asking about the book. It's called Getting to Hear and is available at Book Baby. I wrote it to help organize my thoughts, to try to understand my life and perhaps explain my life to others. A friend of mine who read it, who's known me most of my life, said that I've had a tsunami of a life. The overview of the book is that it's a story that is lusty and enlightening, infuriating and inspiring. It's about a gifted girl who won't shut up about what is wrong with schools, who then goes on to do something about it. It's about a girl of the era of women's lib who fights for its new freedoms and embraces them with gusto. It's about a girl who falls in love with a much older man and whose romance of four decades breaks the rules and builds a legacy. It's about a girl who never suffers fools gladly and the pain that brings. So, as far as the relation to gifted land, I do talk a lot about it, about what I think gifted education should be. They can find that in the book. And it's also can serve as a case study to understand how a gifted person navigates an inflexible system. And as an adult, how does a gifted person navigate different careers and changes in career and living up to one's potential and the drive and guilt that can entail. I should mention that it is available widely now on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and other bookstores, and in Kindle format. So let me just conclude by thanking you, Vanessa, for your work in furthering the understanding of the gifted experience. I look forward to seeing the results of the research that is going on. Best of luck to everybody.
Thank you, Lorraine. I so appreciate you. I encourage everyone to go out and grab a copy of your book. What an extraordinary opportunity. There's certainly no doubt that you have helped pave the way for many for years to come. To our audience from over 52 countries and growing, thank you all for joining us and all of our efforts. In October, as the IGC celebrates 7 years as a 501c3 not-for-profit organization, we will continue to celebrate the works of the IGC research team. Never doubt that a small group of thoughtful, committed citizens can change the world. Margaret Mead. Thank you for joining us. Room with a View is produced by the International Gifted Consortium Education Outreach Initiative for you and by you. Join us on social media, giftedconsortium.org, and connect with me on LinkedIn. Until next time, enjoy the view.